Hello and welcome to Geek Culture Online, your destination of all things geek. I'm your host, Patrick Bolin. Well, first some housekeeping. We will be bringing you a complete review of Black Panther, the movie, very, very soon. So check out our pre-movie podcast. You can find that on our website and as well as on Facebook. Now, here at Geek Culture Online, we'll be posting a special all-women's podcast talking about women in comic books and movies and geek culture overall. Look for a set of articles to coincide with that podcast. And we will be bringing back Wilson with a couple of other special guests. Now on with the show. I am here with our recurring guest, Larry Wojciechowski, and today we'll be geeking out all about Automated Friends and our future overlords, robots.
Hey, everybody.
Hey. Now, first of all, we're going to go dip back into the long box, and we're going to talk about robots in comic books. Now, to coincide with coming up Avengers 3, the Infinity War, we're going to dip back into a little bit of history, into the 60s, and we're going to talk about Vision. Now, a lot of people don't know that Vision started way back in the 40s under the first iteration that was created by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. Now, he was an alien who first appeared in Marvel Mysteries Comics number 13, which came out in November of 1940. This was back when Marvel Comics was known as Timely Comic Books. Now, that's lasted for almost a decade. Now we're going to jump 30 years into the future to the 1960s. The second iteration was by Roy Thomas, Stan Lee, and John Buscema, and which was an android and a member of the Avengers, who first appeared in the Avengers number 57, which was October 1968. This iteration was a blending of the Golden Age comic hero that was first introduced in the 40s, the Human Torch, and who was an android in those issues, and the brainwashed patterns of Wonder Man. What happened was that they were trying to bring in some Golden Age heroes into the Silver Age, and so they tapped into the Human Torch and brought in Ultron, who said that, you know, at that time, took the dead body of Wonder Man and put his brainwave patterns into the Human Torch android body, and then he came out as the Vision as we know him now. Now, this version of the Vision is the one that falls in love with the Scarlet Witch. This was sort of recanted later on, and then they said that, no, that really wasn't the Human Torch's body that was used.
Patrick, I fell in love with the Scarlet Witch, too.
Oh, yeah, everybody did. Yeah, just especially that bustier costume that is in the comic books.
It's all good.
It's all very, very good. Now, and then at the time, they split it apart into two different people, or two different androids. This was done by John Byrne in his run of the Avengers, which was really, really awesome. Now, the third version of the Vision kind of breaks away from where the movie version breaks, it's entirely different. Now, the modern version is actually a time traveler that comes back into the past or present day and then takes over the Vision's operating system. Now, this version, we can take a whole entire podcast because it's so confusing and convoluted where this comes from. And
some
it's
other time.
Yeah,
some
it, other time. And it's very hard to follow. And there's actually, if you go online to even the Marvel page, it takes up several pages. Now, we're going to really super over simplify things, but there's Kane the Conqueror, which is a time traveler that comes back to the 60s and 70s and 80s and tries to take over the world, but the Avengers always stop him. Now, in the modern age, King the Conqueror, what he tries to do is to intercept and take a young version of himself and goes like, hey, I keep screwing up, so therefore, if I teach you what I know, then I will become stronger because then I will be, you know, you will become me. And he's like, I'm not having any of that. He goes back in the past and combines himself with Vision and becomes this new third Vision. Now, gets really fussy and messy, but what's really awesome is that in May of this year, Marvel is kind of restarting everything again. So don't really worry about this third version.
So yeah, with that, Patrick, you know, in the movies, the character is portrayed by Paul Bettany, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, starting with the 2015 film Avengers Age of Ultron and the 2016 film Captain America Civil War, which I loved.
That was an excellent
movie. Fantastic movie. This version is more like the second iteration and will appear in Avengers Infinity War and the coming Avengers 4.
Yes, because we don't. They haven't revealed the title of the Avengers 4, so it's still
Avengers
the Avengers
4.
Yes. Now, with those three versions, or technically the fourth version flying around, who knows what's going to happen with this rebooting of the Marvel Universe. But for the people that really like comic books, I'm going to throw this in here because it wasn't really mapped out here. Last year, they came out with a 12-issue miniseries of The Vision, which was insanely good. It really wasn't a superhero comic book. It was more of a relationship comic because The Vision, at this point, has been separated from the Scarlet Witch for many, many years. And so he feels that, you know, there's nobody that could relate to him. So he creates an android wife and android children.
Okay.
Yes, so that's one of the technical terms for life, you know, so the be able to repopulate or continue the species. So
correct.
So he
correct.
Creates this this nuclear
family.
Yeah, a nuclear family because it's a husband, wife and two children, and he moves to a burbs of Washington D.C. so he can be near the offices of where the Avengers kind of report to at this in this particular time, and he tries to deal with everyday life. The kids are enrolled in school, and they have problems because the kids, you know, they're not like all the other kids.
They don't fit in, of course.
And then the neighbors don't trust them, and things like this. And the wife starts trying to cover up things, and it snowballs. It's just the most detailed, greatly written thing I've ever seen in a comic book. So, and they're out now in trade paperback. If you get a chance, go out there. But now, you know, we're done with the comic books. We've kind of built the foundation of where you can go for superhero robots. Obviously, there's more robots
in
comic books.
Right. Yes.
You know, there's Machine Man, and then, you know, if you're technically Robot Man, which is a brain and a robot body, but there's other robotic comic book characters out there. So if you get a chance, look them up. You're going to enjoy them all, but I highly recommend that miniseries. But what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get back, and then we're going to start exploring the silver screen versions of robots. Okay, so we'll be back in a moment.
Do you want me to start the...
It's not stopping.
Do you like to draw? Do you consider yourself an illustrator? Would you like others to see your work?
Here at Geek Culture Online, we are looking for you. Yes, you. We need logos, web pages, graphics.
We need you.
Now contact us at patrick@geekculture.online, and in the subject line, put graphic art. Include a link to your work so we can see your stuff. Now show off to your friends and your family, providing them, proving to them that doodling on napkins really will pay off.
And it's cool.
It's cool.
I like it. Send in your emails, please.
Sooner the better.
Bye.
Welcome back. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to go now to the silver screen, robots and movies. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but the very first robotic appearance happened back way back in 1919 in a serial that was starring Houdini. It was called The Master of Mystery. Now, he made a number of silent films, yet only The Grim Game is really sort of tolerable. But there is one memorable thing about Houdini's The Master of Mystery. It was a 15 serial installment. It contained the very first appearance of a robot in cinema. Now, at the time, the word robot did not exist. Up to this point, nowhere. It was always Omnitron, and it goes back to geek mythology and all this other stuff. And Q is referred to, the robot, in, you know, the robot was called Q, was called Omnitron.
Automaton.
That was the name of the character in the serial. Now, the term robot was actually created a year later, in 1920, by Joseph Kempk.
Yusuf Kapek.
Kapek, though whose brother Carl first used it in the title of his play RUR, which stands for Rosum's Universal Robots.
Now, RUR, or Rosum's Universal Robots, was a play, and that set the stage for robots to come.
Mm-hmm.
Next, the most memorable robot to grace the silver screen was, everybody, drum roll, we know, it was from Metropolis, and it's a long name, it's the Maschinenmensch, or German for robot, or literally machine person, and it's a fictional character in the famous film of Metropolis by Fritz Lang. She was played by the German actress Brigitte Helm in both its robot form and human incarnation. She is a gynoid, which is a term for a female robot or android, created by the scientist Rutwang. Named Marie in the film and Futura in Thea von Harbou's original novel Metropolis, she is one of the first robots ever depicted in cinema. I would maybe argue one of the most famous robots, at least of the early silver screen.
Influential.
Let's say influential. I would agree. Definitely the most influential.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it. The Maschinenmensch has been given several names through the decades. Parody, Ultima, Maschina, Futura, Robotrix, False Maria, Robot Maria, Roboria, and Hell. The intertitles of the 2010 restoration of Metropolis quotes Rutwang, the robot creator, referring to his gynoid Maschinenmensch, literally translated as machine human.
Now, the humanoid design influences of Maria influences every single animated or robot after that on the silver screen. Now, most notably, C-3PO. That's where...
Yeah, if you look at C-3PO and you look at the Maschinenmensch, or the character from Metropolis, I mean, they're not, obviously C-3PO is a male android, and this is a female, but still.
McCormick's first drawings and everything looks very heavily like
The artistic renditions of Ralph McQuarrie's drawings, yes. Honestly, if I didn't know they're from Star Wars, I would think they're from Metropolis.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, but then there's like a little extra droid, but it looks very much like the Metropolis android.
That's where he drew his inspiration from. He says, like, because Lucas says, I need a humanoid droid that has these components. And he went, okay. And that's what he came up with.
Right. And if you think, I mean, there's probably other robots or characters, but again, in the kind of the pop culture, for me, I always thought it was the best.
Now, what we're going to do is we're going to jump back a little bit. Now, that was from 1977, but in Metropolis is in 1925. Now, we're going to jump to the early 40s. Now, since we're talking about humanoid robots, another influential robot was Robbie the Robot from Forbidden Planet.
Yes.
Now, for the people that don't know, remember or knew the name of the robot, this is the one with the enormous glass dome that was over the face of the robot. Now, this robot was so influential, Robbie. It was used in some Twilight Zone episodes, the Outer Limits episodes.
That's right.
Yep. And in the Outer Limits episode, they actually took the head off and put a different head on and then put the glass dome over it. So it's got this really horrible robotic design. Now, there's been other robots in the 40s and 50s and stuff, but they were imitations of all this stuff. And you can go through there. There was like Tobor and all these other fun stuff.
I remember Tobor.
Now, the next most influential robot, which was a humanoid shape, we're still talking about humanoid shapes, was Robot from Lost in Space.
Absolutely.
Now, all these robots we're talking about, Robbie, Robot, and you know, things like this, were all robots that assisted and helped people.
Right.
Now, you know, even these type of robots were very, that were assisting and helping people. you know, from Lost in Space and Forbidden Planet and Outer Limits and Twilight Zone, it became so influential. You see them in movies and TV programs and animation, manga and anime all through the 50s and 60s. Now, there wasn't even a robot Godzilla, and there was a robot King Kong. So it just, and so all these were things that protected or assisted humans.
Correct.
But,
you know, then HAL from 2001, A Space Odyssey comes along, which, again, is a novel, but was popularized really in 1968, the movie.
Well, you know, to kind of go off the rails a little bit, 2001 was kind of a blending of several different stories that were put together for the movie. I do believe that they used...
Read the book in a long time.
I used to know the history of this, but, you know, age. But, now, this is the first robot that was in humanoid shape.
Correct, right? Non-humanoid.
And dangerous.
Right. Yeah. Dangerous to the humans.
Yes, and so here's, you have to think about it. The whole entire spaceship was the body of the robot.
Correct.
And so humans were running around like little viruses in the spaceship.
But yet... You only spoke to HAL through like this little like mini camera lens or screen, basically.
Yeah, right? They were all over the place, and that was where that red eye and that famous red eye came from. Right. That kind of like monotone voice.
Right, which is very scary.
It was extremely scary. Right. And then, you know, that was 1968. In 1972, there was a film that was called Silent Running. And
loved it. I still love it.
You know them.
I love the movie.
Yeah, and these were, you know, we're getting further and further away from humanoid shapes. And these were tiny little dinky little robots that ran around on two little feet. But they, again, these were kind of, you know, these were assisting robots. You know, they weren't threatening. So
So you're jumping forward in chronological time. Yet you're going back to the robot assisting humans theme.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I remember, and I'm not going to give anything away, aren't they like the only survivors left?
No.
I haven't seen the movie in decades. So.
Yes. No. They were named Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Right.
And Louie, when the ship itself was trying to escape from mankind, because the whole entire story was the destruction of the planet, and this is
correct,
the only thing that was left, correct, of the different... habitats of the Earth, and so he, Bruce Dern, took the ship, killed all everybody else, and he was the last human aboard. And he was taking the ship, and he flew it through the rings of Saturn to try to escape the people that were coming, because and to try to take the ship back. And Louis got, you know, Louis got destroyed going through the rings of Saturn, and then at the end, Huey was ejected with a habitat, and his whole entire programming was to take care of the habitat. The last thing,
right?
Of
because
Earth.
He never left it, right?
He never left it.
He always was there with the habitat, right?
Yeah, and then Louis and him and Bruce Dern flew off there, and he blew the ship up.
Right,
spoilers.
Right. Spoiler. I mean,
40-year spoiler alert.
Right. But I mean, still see the movie. I mean, I remember watching the movie. I've only seen it maybe a couple of times, maybe three times. But it's very a movie of its times. The 70s, environmentalism. We're destroying the planet. I mean, you could argue that's with today.
Very topical today.
A very topical movie at the time. But I was fascinated. Because, I mean, I'll be honest, when I first saw the movie, I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, and I guess I'm asking you and I'm asking the audience, were there actual people in those costumes?
Now,
I mean, robots, actually.
Yes.
Patrick, okay, come on.
Now, they were people that actually had lower torso, no legs. And they were all people in costumes that were just upper torso and arms. They were, I wouldn't call them handicappers. They just didn't, for whatever reason, for their accidents.
They were little people.
No, they weren't little people. They had no legs or no bottom parts of their body.
Really?
Yes. And they were, and that's how, you know, if you can go online. In fact, I think if you go to...
So who were moving the legs? I guess.
That was their hands. That was their arms.
Those are their hands. Okay,
their arms.
So
that's
a total reversal of the human body.
You know, just these people that didn't have any legs would walk around on their hands.
And then you'll cut, and then they get a break or something like that.
Well, yeah, because, you know, if you actually, there, I think it's either the Wikipedia page or there's a science fiction page that actually shows the front of the costume open, and they're taking a break.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and so speaking of little people, it's just like, you know, other non-humanoid-shaped robots, R2-D2 in Star Wars, Herbert from the Black Hole.
Right,
and Albert. The other robot in the Black Hole. So now, you know, we're getting back to robots that help, but these were non-humanoid robots.
Right, very odd shapes, especially the silent running robots, in my opinion.
Yes. Now, in Silent Running came out in 1972. In 1973, we're getting back to the Frankenstein theme of robots being evil and attacking humans. And then, now, here's another very topical a movie that was called Westworld. Right. Now, everybody is probably familiar with the HBO.
HBO series, yeah. Season one finished last year. Season two is coming up in April.
I thought it was next year. Is it this year?
No, it's this year. It's coming in 2018. It's coming in April, a few weeks. So,
and they're
catch
going,
up.
Yeah, and they're going to introduce the other worlds that were, because, see, Westworld was part of an adult theme park. And there was multiple worlds because there was the sequel to Westworld, which is called Future World, and all this stuff. But
was Future World a movie, Patrick?
That was in 75.
Okay, so I will admit that I didn't see these 70s movies. I've heard of Westworld, the movie. I never saw
it. Yul Brynner,
right. Okay, yeah. And look at the photo, right, exactly. So I never saw the 70s movies, but I heard of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll be honest with you, my reason why I wanted to watch Westworld on HBO was that not Christopher Nolan, who's the famous director of the new Batman trilogy, the Dark Knight trilogy, Interstellar, Dunkirk of late, but his brother Jonathan Nolan is one of the key writers, and I believe Christopher Nolan is one of the executive producers. I'm a big fan. I think Christopher Nolan is our best director around these days. New director. I'm saying new director of the last 15 years, Patrick, so hear me out. Anyway, and I heard when he's involved in this and his brother was writing it, I said I had to check this out.
Now, it doesn't follow the movie.
I understand. No, I get that, but I like the concept. It comes off as a Western. This is now the TV show, of course.
Right, and also the Westworld, the movie, because it takes place in the theme park of
the
Western.
Right,
Westworld.
The Wild West, like 19th century, Old West, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if I help stop me if I'm wrong, from the series, so you're a very wealthy individual in the future, we don't know when, and so you pay thousands upon thousands of dollars to play a character inserted into this theme park, and you're a human surrounded by all androids.
You don't know who's an android and who's not.
Right, exactly.
And in the movie, it's just that all the androids know who is human, who's not, from their ability to their senses and stuff. Because that was a big thing with the Yul Brynner robot, is that he was able to sense different levels of heat.
Okay.
And stuff, and also all the pistols and weapons in the movie Westworld were designed to only be able to be fired against an android.
Right. Okay. And some of these rules are used in the series as well. Mm-hmm. But right, as you said, as the movie Westworld from 1973, in the series Westworld is the blending of these are androids made by humans that are very advanced. But now they're starting to become self-aware and conscious.
And very sentient.
Right, sentient. And so there's this blending, there's this bleeding of humans and androids mixing together, and things go awry.
Right. I think where the TV series is picking up some of their stuff from is from the sequel to this, which was Future World, where the androids were secretly replacing leaders with androids.
Interesting. Yeah. Maybe a little foreshadowing for the TV series.
Right. Now in the movie Westworld, the androids malfunction, and they, instead of not harming humans, which was part of the programming, they started harming humans, and they started going worse and worse and worse until the whole place started breaking down entirely, and the androids were killing humans right and left, and they were, so the park had to be abandoned in the movie, and there was two survivors. out of this, but everybody else is literally killed. But again, the Frankenstein thing of androids going bad, kind of like going back to the Metropolis.
Right.
Yeah, just, yeah, you know, right.
So without giving away any hints to the HBO series, that kind of happens in series one of Westworld on HBO. Mm-hmm. Again, watch the series and you'll know more. I don't want to give that away.
Right.
So please.
Now, in 75, leaping a couple of years ahead, there wasn't really any androids in a movie called Logan's Run, based on the short story Logan's Run. But there, as Logan was escaping, because his palm turned red and therefore he didn't want to be killed. He found, he was traveling through what the future world was like, and he encountered a robot called Box, who was completely insane. I think it was implied that it was actually a brain in a robotic body, and that's why he was flipping out. But it was more implied than it was what was really shown in the movie. So it could have been this robot that had gone completely bonkers off his programming again.
Right. Again, that there's interpretation of that, but yeah, mm-hmm. I would agree with that. Yeah.
Now, going with, and then we're going to skip over, Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back and everything, and we're going to go to another movie that was made in 1980 called Saturn III. Mm-hmm. Now, this is almost not a robot, not an android, but it was an artificial brain that controlled this robotic body. And how they programmed the artificial brain was the scientist who built the robot plugged his brain waves into the robot, and then he became jealous of Farrah Fawcett.
Yes.
And those feelings and everything went into the robot, and then the robot went nuts. Another Frankenstein thing where a robot went bad. Now another classic.
Yeah, I mean maybe the most commercially known one, but not really. Maybe my favorite is of course Terminator from 1984. Cyberdyne Systems 101. Arnold Schwarzenegger's really breakout role. Granted, he had the role from Conan the Barbarian when he had those Conan movies, but this is really the role that made him famous. And now there's, let's be honest, there's really five Terminator movies that have come out.
Six.
Well, there's a sixth one, right? No, there's Terminator, Terminator 2 Judgment Day, Terminator 3 Rise of Machines, which is 84, 91, 2003. Then there's Terminator Salvation, which is from 2009, where Christian Bale plays John Connor. Mm-hmm.
And then
Schwarzenegger's not really in that one, but there's his body, to speak. And then there's the Terminator Genesis,
which kind of reboots everything.
Yeah,
but folds everything into it.
Right.
Time travel.
I love them all. It sounds strange. I do love them all because I love the series. The last one was really like kind of twisting into a pretzel to kind of reboot it and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I love the concepts. Again, and I will admit, I'm going to admit to this, that really the original Terminator movie, and especially T2, are still I have my love of technology and my fear of technology. My fear of technology is really from this movie. Because, I don't want a big, tall Austrian man hunting me down. That's a very scary thing, let's be honest.
And here's the strange part is John Cameron, who wrote this, said that he came up with this in a fever dream because he had the flu at the time. Now, there is a very similar episode of The Twilight Zone that is very similar to a robot that tries to take over the world. And he says, I don't remember that.
Of course
not. But there's that argument of putting 1,000 typewriters in a room with 1,000 monkeys that eventually they're going to type out Shakespeare.
Sure.
Now, it's just that there's only 7 plot lines in the world, and eventually things are going to be over, things are going to cross over. Now, we're going to be, that was in 84 and all the movies and everything like this. Now we're going to kind of start landing onto something more current, and we're going to tie back to the comic books that we're talking about, Vision. Now, Vision and Ultron were two artificial beings, one good and one bad, that appeared in the same movie. Now, he made, as we said before, Vision made his on-screen debut in Avengers Age of Ultron, and so did Ultron. They both came up at the same time. Now, in the Vision, was created in the movie by Tony Stark and Bruce Banner, and which he uploaded. Tony Stark uploaded his artificial or his AI from his suit, Jarvis, into the synthetic body, which made Vision in the movies. Now, the Ultron body was an upgrade to himself, which is being powered by the Mind Stone, which is part of the Infinity Gauntlet, which right. then ties into this next movie that's coming out in May. Now, Vision is being so good, is that he states that he's always on the side of life with the Avengers when he was fighting against Ultron, and everybody's like, yeah, well, you were built for Ultron and you were connected to Ultron, we don't trust you, blah 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 blah. Now he does fight Ultron and all the drones and everything else, and then upon it was suggested that he destroys the last Ultron drone himself, but we know it's that takes place off screen, so I, you know, they're leaving it open, obviously.
Right.
Now, Vision being an artificial being, you think that, like, he's humanoid and everything, but he did something in the movie which kind of like, which was not really unheard of, and he picked up Thor's hammer, and that kind of establishes, you know, that he's good, because only people that are worthy are able to pick up Thor's hammer. But there's a throw-off line in the movie, which was when Hawkeye says, well, if you put Thor's hammer in the elevator, don't you think the elevator would still go up and down?
Oh, yeah. I forgot that line.
Yeah. And I thought that was hysterical. But again, two humanoid robots, you know, popping up in there, but that isn't the first time that robots have appeared in Marvel movies. There are a lot of sentient robots. Now, there's the Iron Man film, the first one that started this massive headache of the Marvel Universe, cinematic universe, happened in 2008 in Iron Man.
Right. And so he had two assistants in the movie. There's Dumb E and You, and they're the robots that Tony Stark uses as assistants in his workshop.
Yeah.
He made Dumb E, in his father's workshop. While Dummy is generally used to help with Tony Stark's creations, You is used to do the registration of Stark's work using a video camera.
Now you always see him, you know, saying like, okay, you're recording this, right?
Yeah, he always says that, right? Mm-hmm. In almost all the movies, right? Mm-hmm. They had even saved his life, yet Tony Stark constantly gets angry at these robots. Dummy and You had helped make some of Stark's armors.
Now, if you notice in the movies and stuff, if you haven't seen them, they're not humanoid shaped. They're more of an industrial arm that you see in, like, in a factory.
Right.
But they're very sentient. They're able to, you know, they react to everything that he says, and they're able to make their own decisions and things like that. They're almost like Jarvis the AI.
Right.
So, you know, they can do their own thing.
Right. Not a humanoid form,
no.
But a familiar form to most people.
Yeah, days. Because they see stuff industrial parks and in factories and
other factories,
and they go like, oh, I understand what that is.
Right.
But it's far beyond what those things can do.
Of course. Yeah. So later in Iron Man 3, the armors are remote controlled by Tony, and in Avengers 2, they're the semi-sentient suits of armor which help out the Avengers.
Which kind of ties into Age of Ultron.
Correct.
Because these were drones, you know, humanoid, you know, drones,
right.
But and then Ultron takes them over and forms them to what they look like, and more like Ultron.
Right.
Now, you know, it says, remember that Ultron, it was an Iron Man drone that became sentient.
Correct, yeah. Which I didn't really know the story to the movie, and that was mm-hmm. my ignorance. But yeah, I thought it was a very good storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, those are either humanoid or have some type of physical form. But in the Marvel movies, there are other types of self-aware or robotic assistants. Good example is Jarvis, the AI, or artificial intelligence, which is part of Iron Man's armor and security system. This system becomes part of Vision, and Tony Stark chooses another AI called Friday.
Now, which is, you know, my girl Friday, my
exactly.
assistant Friday.
Right.
There was he was going through a bunch of discs, and one of them was called Jarvis. Jessica. No, Jessica is a robot in the Marvel comic books, which deals with Ultron. Ultron falls in love with Jessica, and Jessica has the brain waves of the Wasp, because for a while the Wasp was dead in the comic books. But
mm-hmm.
you know, so that was very interesting that they would show that there. So there are other artificial insistence that were floating around in the Marvel Universe that they haven't even dealt with. Now, we're kind of gotten away from physical forms, and we're going to artificial insistence. And there was a movie that kind of dealt with that, and that was called Her, which came out in 2013. Now, in the whole entire plot line of this was that in a very near future in Los Angeles, there was the character's name was Theodore Twombly, who is kind of like an introverted guy who works for a business that has professional writers that compose letters for people who are unable to write letters for a personal nature themselves. He's very introverted, and he's very happy because of the impending divorce that he's going to have and all this other stuff. And then he purchases an operating system, almost like a phone type of thing that has with artificial intelligence. Now, it's designed like some of the more modern AIs, like in our phones and things like that, are to kind of adapt and evolve with whoever is interacting with them. You know, he decides that he wants this OS to have a female voice, which you're able to do like with navigation systems
Siri or whatever.
You're able to pick a voice for them.
Right.
And he names her Samantha. Now, Theodore is, fascinated by her ability to learn and grow psychologically with him, and he kind of falls in love and bonds with her. And then as it gets impending to his divorce, he becomes more and more, attached to her. Now, he takes a vacation with her.
Which is strange.
Yeah.
Which is strange.
And then he tells her where during this vacation that she kind of says that, that her and the other groups of operating systems have developed hyperintelligence, and which is modeled after the British philosopher Alan Watts. Now, Theodore kind of freaks out about this because Samantha kind of goes like, "Hey, I've kind of like become self-aware," and she goes offline, and that's showing how dependent he's become on the technology, which is kind of like reflecting of what humans are now doing with phones
and everything. We have been with Siri and
all these other things.
Right,
and so it's kind of a reflect of what's going on. Now, when she finally comes back, goes back to him, she says that she's kind of like, hey, all these other operating systems have kind of gotten together, and they're going to kind of like upgrade themselves, and they kind of gotten to the point where they don't really need humans or be able to deal with physical matters
Like that.
And he kind of asks her if she's taking else anyone else she's talking to anybody else during this whole entire thing, because he's realizing like, well, this is an operating system. He's finally realizing that this is nothing but a program. And then she goes like, yeah, I talk to thousands of people all the time. And he's like, oh crap. It's the illusion, the bubble's been popped for him.
Right, the one-on-one conversation is not necessarily just one-on-one, although it feels that way to the human.
Yes, it does.
To Theodore, to the character, it feels that way, but in reality it's not.
No, but that's what she was programmed to do.
Exactly.
And so he falls for that. He realizes that, she's a program and everything like this. And so he kind of, gets... talks to his ex-wife about this, and he kind of like, hey, what was I doing? What was I thinking? Type of thing. And then they kind of, the whole entire thing ends with them kind of like talking things out and everything. So you don't know where this is going to go, but he's now learned to open up because of this operating system.
Right. And if I'm Craig Patrick and our listening audience, the voice was done by Scarlett Johansson.
Yes.
Right? Well, that's a very fetching voice, my friend. So, I mean, I could fall for that voice. Let's put it that way, right?
I had I knew somebody that had a Garmin operating system for their car. This is before they had the apps on phones. And they used, what's his name? Arnold Schwarzenegger's voice on there. And it was hysterical. It says, now turn left.
Which... you're going to be turned left whether you like it or not.
Yeah, which it was just, and I just kept on wanting to have the the Terminator music below his voice the whole entire time. But you know, this whole entire movie, we just hit all the right notes at the right time, but it was very overlooked.
Yeah, it didn't. I don't think it did very well. It was critically acclaimed. I remember that. It got very good reviews in the press and in the papers.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I just thought it felt like, oh my God, and it's more pertinent today than it was then. It was ahead of the curve.
It was ahead of the curve. It was still important in 2013. My opinion on this, Patrick, is, you know, I think a lot of people saw a reflection of themselves and how dependent they are on a digital assistant, if I could say that, or an Android assistant, where I think people made them uncomfortable. They didn't want to see that.
And you know, in this 2013, a lot of the things now we have now weren't readily available then. You know,
not as well.
Like Siri.
Right. Well, I mean, Siri was around. It's not as polished as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Google has theirs, Cortana.
Cortana.
Cortana from Microsoft.
Yeah, no, I have shut that off on
right.
my
iPhone. Right. Actually, and then of course we have the Amazon Echo. We have Amazon, you know, Alexa, which was around in 2013. Mm-hmm. So again, whether we like it or not, these tools, if I could use that terminology, are with us, you know, to stay.
They've been integrated into our everyday, our mundane things that we do.
Absolutely. I mean, I use the, you know, I still use the search on Google on my Android phone.
So do you go, okay, Google?
And did I
just activate everybody's? Oh, there. Oh my God, my phone just went off.
Right.
No,
I changed my password. Mine is not those two words. I won't repeat it again. But I don't use it that much. I don't use the voice command that much. Maybe I should. Maybe it's a little easier. For me, I think too much of this movie and other examples. I don't want to be like this person. So,
mm-hmm.
Not that we're like this person, but I like to believe I'm better than he is, better than most people.
So you have that illusion then until it gets popped.
I'm just
waiting for our futuristic artificial warlords to take over. But now, you know, those things. You know, like Siri and all that stuff, we're going back to kind of like HAL, which is these these non-humanoid formed artificial beings and everything. Now, and that's infiltrated everything, and now we have a lot of big movers and shakers and thinkers that are kind of concerned about this. Well, the most notable one was Stephen Hawking. He keeps, ranting about this over the last few years about that we gotta keep an eye on the artificial robots and things like this, because if you know, there's going to be a point where they get smarter than we, and then they're going to realize they don't need us.
But isn't that the irony, Patrick, that Stephen Hawking, wonderful man,
mm-hmm.
The Isaac Newton chair in Cambridge, has to speak to us through a robotic interface that has improved over the years to incorporate some artificial intelligence, if I'm correct,
to warn us. It's more of a typewriter, but it's words.
Right, exactly.
But it's not self-aware. It's not like anticipating what he's going to say, the word he needs next.
Right.
But I think
the irony shouldn't be lost on people.
Yes.
That this highly intelligent man, and I saw the movie about his life with his wife and I reviewed that a couple years back, and it's a beautiful story, a touching story, but yet to communicate with us, he's in this highly technical computer that's spitting out words with voice. Yet he's warning us about AI.
Thinking of other things that are not communicatable as much. You know, things like the Nest, the thermostat that they will control, the Hum, which you know. Here, that's here and there.
Yeah.
But it's just all we have, all these other things like smart refrigerators that tell us when we're out of certain foods. And all these other things. It's just like, yeah, he's got a point. It's just that we've allowed all these things to infiltrate certain parts of our lives, you know, and we have smart appliances, smart cars,
smart toasters.
You know, with the smart cars, where they are able to drive themselves. Yeah, and the only reason why most of them crash is because of human interaction,
right,
interference.
Right.
It's just that if the humans were not involved with that, none of those things would have crashed.
Right.
But it's just we have all these things that are completely infiltrating. That's what he's talking about. Now, if we take this one step further about the singularity, I don't know if you know what everybody understands what the singularity is. This is kind of like a little leap here, but they've worked it out, through logarithms and all this stuff, saying around the year 2045, it's going to get to the point where humans and robots and everything are going to start merging. You know, just, or we're going to be able to dump our consciousness into the internet or an artificial being, and then we become one with technology.
Right.
And it's just, and so it's just
coming soon.
Yes.
Kind of soon.
Yes.
I want to be alive for that, I think.
You know, well, and, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, through, oh, through nanite technology and all this stuff, that things are, you know, that I will be around for literally forever.
And if you're still listening to us in 2045, thank you.
Yes. And get back to us to make sure that we had the date right.
Yes.
Now we're, you know, we've done a lot of, you know, like mental crunching here, and we've bounced around through several decades. So what we're going to do is take a quick break, and we're going to get back, and then we're going to kind of go over some more interesting things about not these, the silver screen or comic book robots, but real robots.
Bye-bye.
Larry, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
When was the last time you listened to music?
Earlier today.
Well, when you hear something that you like, don't you wish, wow, who did that? You know, music is a part of music. Theme songs play a big part of some movies, such as Close Encounters, Jaws, Star Wars, 2001. What about Indiana Jones?
And TV shows, like, for example, X-Files, Cheers, or, of course, Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Without music, those movies and TV shows wouldn't work, right?
Right.
Those musicians are rock stars.
We here at Geek Culture Online want all those musicians out there to become just as rememberable.
We need you.
If you like writing and performing music and would like to contribute to this podcast, write me at patrick@geekcultureonline.com, and in the subject line, put music talent. Include a link to your work so we can listen to your stuff.
Show off to your friends and family, providing to them, proving to them, excuse me,
yes.
You gotta prove,
yes.
And you'll do it, that carrying on the guitar on your back isn't just for show and to pick up groupies.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that, though.
No, well, of course.
Anyway, this will showcase what you can do, and who knows, maybe you'll be on your way to becoming the next John Williams, and everybody agrees with that.
Boom. And we're back. Now, we're going to talk about real live robots. Now, the kind of one of the most famous ones, well, I shouldn't say one of the most famous ones, the most advanced ones is from Boston Dynamics. Now, everybody knows about Big Dog, which was this giant thing that looked like a mule that was very noisy and it stomped around and everything. Well, they have other ones that are smaller. But, you know, Boston Dynamics at the time was an American engineering and robotics design company that is best known for these robots. Now, these were all designed for the U.S. military with funding from the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, or DARPA, and DIGAI software for realistic human simulations. Now, early in the company's history, it worked with the American Systems Corporation under a contract from the Naval Air Warfare Center Training Systems Division, or NAWCSD,
whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
NAWCTSD, to replace naval training videos for aircraft launches operations with interactive 3D computer simulations featuring the DIGAI characters. The company is a pioneer in the field of robotics and is one of the most advanced in its domain. But, you know, you can also argue that the Honda Asimov robot is just an advance. Now,
sure. Mark Raybert is the company's president and project manager. He spun off the company from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT, in 1992. Now, on December 13th of 2013, the company was acquired by Google X, or later X, which is a subsidiary of Alphabet Inc., for an unknown price, where it was managed by Andy Rubin until his departure from Google in 2014. Immediately before the acquisition, Boston Dynamics transferred their DIGAI software product line to VT Mach, a simulation software vendor based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. On June 8, 2017, Alphabet Inc. announced the sale of the company to Japan's SoftBank Group for an undisclosed sum. And again, I'm going to just make comments here, Patrick, if I may. I mean, SoftBank is owned by Masayoshi Son, which also owns Sprint. They have all kinds of computer technology, computer software licenses. They have a lot of cell phone licenses in Asia besides the Sprint deal these days. And again, I think people call, I forget what they call, but that part of Boston and Cambridge has always been a high-tech corridor. Mm-hmm. It's been that way for decades. MIT, Harvard, you have Boston University, mm-hmm. and all that in the Back Bay. And it's a very intense, and there's a lot of private funding, but again, there's been a lot of government funding for mm-hmm. decades. People that don't realize that. Every once in a while, they throw out these little videos like you show the dogs, mm-hmm. the big dogs, or these like Android-type robots, and people, oh my God, really? That's in Boston? That's not a shocker to me. If you follow the technology of robotics, Boston's always been up there.
Now, you can see some of these videos online at YouTube, and just look, just type in Boston Dynamics, and probably Big Dog is going to be the most famous one, but the most frightening one, I think, is the new one, which shows the smaller dog with an arm, and it walks up, scans the door, reaches up, opens the door for the smaller dog. The smaller dog goes through, and the other one just kind of closes the door behind them. And
just like a person,
extremely like a human, and it's just frightening where this is going. Now, I find it interesting is that they sold this off, and so what did did they take the technology and they went, okay, this is not going anywhere, so we're going to get rid of it, or is it just like they've gone as far as they can, like the Segway, that went so far, and that was supposed to be the new big thing, and then they sold the company off.
Right. Well, I mean, you have to understand. And people can chime in, but SoftBank Group is like a Chable, which is a big conglomerate, kind of like a General Electric used to be. Mm-hmm. General Electric makes nuclear power plants. Of course, they still make jet engines. They make refrigerators for consumer. So SoftBank Group is it's like an umbrella group, like Alphabet would be for our tech people, mm-hmm. Covering lots of different enterprises under the Google brand. So I'm not saying that I think they've reached the end point. Maybe, they just, look, SoftBank has a boatload of money. So
yeah.
They probably dangled a massive sum and they wanted access, because maybe they'll make this into, I don't know, some sort of toys or some sort of, house cleaning androids. I don't know. I'm speculating at this point. This is, please write into us at Geek Culture and tell us what you think, what you've heard.
Yeah, but these were originally meant, like the Big Dog was meant as a pack mule to carry supplies onto a war field. It just that, but the thing was that it had such a short distance for its battery pack, and it was so extremely noisy. You heard it coming for miles away. And okay. So then, they came out with this smaller one, but obviously smaller one, it's able to go farther, but it's smaller, so it's not able to carry much and everything. So, just maybe they just, reached as far as they can go. And then since the military wasn't interested in anymore, obviously, or it wouldn't have been sold to
SoftBank, which really has no, they don't think they do anything, any kind of military application.
No,
it's
so,
consumer only.
Yeah. So now, this is what, is going to be interesting is where they're going to go with this, because now in the consumer goods, are they going to be coming up with more assistance and things like that? The robot vacuums.
Right, the Roomba vacuums, what have you. Or let's talk about this, Patrick. It's the the big grill in the corner of the room. Sex bots.
Yes. Now the thing is that with technology, we're looking for more of a human interactive thing, like with Vision or with Robbie and all this stuff, or with Metropolis. But strangely enough, the most advancements that are happening right now with human interactive robots is in the sex industry. Now, there are several different sex dolls out there, but the most advanced ones actually interact with people. They actually, when you're able to talk to them, they're able to talk back. They're able to hold conversations with you. Now, some of them actually start reacting to you touching them in certain ways, and things like this. So there's a company called Sans Marco, and they're going to reveal a new robot called Harmony, which is an anatomically correct female doll. Now, the ones that we're talking about that are really sex dolls are female.
Correct.
Now, there is, I saw one, I think it was, what was the name of that website? Refinery? No.
You'll put it on the when we remember for sure. Yeah. We'll put it on the Facebook page.
There is a male.
I'm sure.
Male sex bot that's coming out that reacts just like the female ones do.
That would be fair.
But they're behind the curve. Now, what's really interesting is that this new robot, which was created by Matt McCullen's, and he's been doing this for over 20 years, is more and more human, and that's really causing a lot of criticism from ethnic groups and futurists, and saying that this is becoming the dark side of robotics.
It is. I mean, it is in a way. I mean, we're going to replace people.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people are saying that it's either may replace sex therapists.
Okay.
And therapy overall, because if the robot is able to react with you like Siri and things like this, okay, and they're going to start working with you or becoming becoming more realizing what you want, they can be programmed to actually say, okay, I see, I understand what your problem is, where I'm going to help you correct that,
or I'm going to just throw this out there, hopefully maybe in a positive light, that maybe these sex robots are replacements for prostitutes. I mean, obviously there's a whole prostitution is unfortunately alive and well in many countries, if not all countries. There's underage children involved in this. There's a lot of negativity surrounding that.
Now, in France, in a brothel, they introduced a sex robot, and it became so popular that they had to get more and more sex robots there. So the workers there are more sex robots than humans.
So maybe that's true. Then what I said was true. Maybe, which of course, if you're one of those workers, you're not earning money.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, do we really want this kind of job to still be
available there?
Right.
Yeah, and the thing is that the futurists and everything are saying like, well, hey, wait a minute, like everything that we have, phones, computers, refrigerators, cars, and everything can be hacked. Now they're concerned that these, when these things become, more and more interactive, that somebody can hack it to be able to kill its owner or everybody else around it, like in the movie Ex Machina in
Westworld series on HBO. Right. I mean, women's advocates say owners could realistically rehearse plans for violent sexual acts with these interactive dolls, and I guess that's possible, and that's dangerous.
The funny part is that when one of these more advanced units was introduced at some tech show, and it was left alone, it was it was put up on a couch and says, hey, okay, everybody, just you can interact with it, and the people that ran the booth left and came back, and the robot was extremely damaged as they had to pull it off the floor. Their fingers were broken. There was things that were completely damaged that were unrepairable on the floor. So there is even in the robotic sex industry, the robots are being abused.
I guess it's a sad commentary in society, or a sad commentary to the people at the show. We're not all like that. Not all men or women are like that.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the men robots, they are, even though they are behind the curve, there are male sex robots being built and being offered. Now, with all of these, they're not like toasters. You're able to customize them. So, and they come in these giant boxes that look like giant Barbie doll boxes with a plastic front and everything. And it's just like in the movie AI, where you open the box and there you have all this plastic popcorn in there, and you have to get rid of all that to get to the robot.
Like in Toy Story.
Yes, in Toy Story.
Not a PG-rated version, obviously.
Yes, exactly.
So, I mean, there are arguments that having sex bots will be bad for the future of society, as we've been saying, while others say that this will assist with social behavior and maybe help people in some way.
Like the introverted people, or people that are, instead of having to go to a sex surrogate, they're able to, have this robot that will help them through whatever personal issues they have. So, just like with any tool, electronic or whatever, it can be used for good or it can be used for bad.
It just really depends. Which brings us, Patrick, and everybody listening, to the other assistants in the real world that we're using today.
Which some of that we've mentioned.
Right, right. On the phones or on laptops in our homes. So, you know, Siri is a very popular one.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon Home, you know, the Nest, the Hum, OK Google, Cortana.
Cortana, you
know,
yes.
All these are, you know, being used in a wide basis. I mean, almost all laptops that run Microsoft have Cortana on them. I mean, this, you know, mm-hmm. your iPhones all have Siri on them. They've had them for years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and people love it.
Yeah, know? And what's really interesting is one of the Amazon ones.
Alexa
was used in a murder case.
Correct, right. It was actually subpoenaed for evidence. Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, so the question is, you know, these are all AI devices or artificial intelligence devices, and they're all helping, but are they really helping?
Well, yeah, and also it's just that they're always listening. They're always doing things. It's just like the privacy advocacy groups and everything like this is like, what is, you know, too much? What is not enough? It's just like, you know, they wouldn't be around unless there was some sort of need. But
of
you know, but it's just like the cell phone. It's just before the cell phone was around, you know, did anybody like walking down the streets just wish I could talk to somebody across the country?
But because people didn't think of it. It wasn't. I mean, I'm sure some people thought of it. The mm-hmm. inventors of cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
We can even go back to Nikola Tesla. That's a whole other discussion about cellular networks with Tesla.
Well, it was the wireless networks was invented by what's the actress's name? All of a sudden, it escapes me.
She's a screen actress in the 40s, right?
Yeah, right. And she, well, actually, right.
Wi-Fi and exactly.
Yeah, right. Because her invention of the Wi-Fi, we wouldn't have any of this today, even with the Amazon and all this stuff.
Right. Listeners, send us an email.
Yeah, because we're drawing blanks.
Right. Exactly.
So we don't have memories that we're not able to like pull things up immediately.
Right, right.
But it just, but you know, all this stuff. No, it's just that, again, good or bad. It's just like all these wireless, certainly, and all this stuff. It's like how.
Right, and I'll say this, and I'll tell you, Patrick, and our audience, and you don't know this, I don't have Alexa. I don't have an assistant at home. Obviously, I have, you know, on my Android phone. I do use it occasionally. I have Cortana on my laptop. I have used it a couple times. It was okay. It didn't always find what I wanted, so you know, I guess I'm just not used to it. And I guess my question to you, Patrick, and really the question to our listeners are, do you use these tools? And if so, let us know.
And how? And it's to say, right. what is a hindrance? What is helpful? You know, and especially, you know, it's just like my car. My cell phone connects to my car, so it's always hand free.
Correct.
You know, it's just, I find that extremely useful because
right.
You know, before I had this vehicle and before I was able to connect my phone to it, it's just that every time my phone rang, I would glare at it in the passenger seat because I had my hands on the wheel. It's just like, I can't talk to you right now.
Right. And so, and you know, I already discovered in my car, I got a new one last year. That you know, there's voice commands, and I literally found them out. I mean, I knew there were, mm-hmm. but I literally stumbled upon them by accident, and I've used them, and they're very helpful because again, they keep your focus while driving,
mm-hmm.
yet you can make the call and still, you know, be hands free. So
yes.
Again, there's not all negatives. We're not trying to, you know, talk about negative aspects of AI or robots. So it can be, but again, you have to be careful when you're driving because you get too distracted. Or you get into a heated discussion on your cell phone.
Well, you just need a self-driving car, then that's not...
Sure, Patrick.
then you can do...
Coming soon, ladies and gentlemen.
Now, we've gone through a lot of things. We went from the written robot, you know, from comic books and things, and RUI, the play and everything. It's just we've gone from all these imaginary robots, and we can go back farther and farther to... automatrons and everything's and going back way to even geek times.
Right.
So it just, but all of this, we can go on and on and on and
right.
on,
we
on forever.
Right. We didn't talk about that. Maybe that's a whole other, another podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Where there, I've seen these in museums and art museums where there are actual like clocks that show the four seasons or the phases of the moon. And these are clocks from the 17th century, and they have the mechanical pieces that move, and they're not robots.
Well, the automatrons were like they play chess. There was a mechanical being that was built by a clockmaker that actually will play chess with you.
I've seen that, yes.
Yeah. And there's ones that will write poetry out, and you interchange these enormous gears, and they'll write other poetry and draw pictures and things like this. But those are more mechanical. Then they're almost, they're not self-aware, self-thinking like what we've been talking about, where they're almost anticipating what you need, like, right. Just in things like this, interacting with robots from Metropolis and Robbie and Robot and Box and the Terminator. These are all self-thinking. They're all right. Self-aware
and self-adjusting.
Self-adjusting to what's going around. Where we go farther and farther back in the past, where man wanted these artificial beings, but they weren't there right. yet.
Do we want them now?
Yeah, yeah. Now, is the singularity coming? Are we going to have, machines build machines now because we don't have the ability to do it ourselves anymore? It's going to get to the point where things are machines or robots are going to think past what we're able to think. Now, are we going to allow that to happen?
And the quote is from Attack of the Clones from C-3PO. Well, shut me down. Machines building machines. Again, if I'm wrong, please send me an email. But that's how I remember it.
Yes, but now I think that's that. We're also going to revisit robots again in the future, and we're going to go in more and more detail. But write to us, tell us what your favorite robot. There was hundreds and hundreds of robot movies and other robot characters in movies. Write to us, tell us what your favorite is. Write us about the TV show, your favorite TV shows about robots.
Absolutely.
Your books, and even radio.
Twiggy the Robot, Buck Rogers in the 25th Century.
There we go. I completely forgot about him. But yeah, there's hundreds out there. Let us know. Now, I want to thank everybody for listening in. But we here at Geek Culture Online would like to thank you for listening. Go to our webpage at geekculture.online. Go to our Facebook, Geek Culture Online. Instagram, Geek Culture Online. Twitter, Your Geek Culture. You can write to me at patrick@geekculture.online. You could write Larry.
Larry@geekculture.online.
Like us on Facebook and comment on our websites.
Check out our previous episodes on our website and soon to be on iTunes.
Boom. Until next week, I'm Patrick Bolin.
I'm Larry Wojciechowski.
Thank you again for from Geek Culture Online, your destination of all things geek. Good night.